Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Future. That's the nothing personal word of the day. It is Monday, May 6th, and we're talking about future. We're going to get so much this weekend. I don't know about you, but I didn't leave the couch this weekend between the games and the races and the roasts of Tom Brady. We're going to get to all of it. The Derby, what a finish. But we got to start with the Marlins trade of Luis Arraez. And I get that we shouldn't normally start with Marlins stuff. We have a much more diverse audience than people in Miami, though I appreciate the South Florida 10%. When a trade like this happens this early, the reason why it got so much attention is we're talking about May 3rd, May 4th, May 5th. A trade like that is going to get attention. When the Marlins do a trade like that, it's going to get even more attention. People's view is that the Marlins have started a rebuild. All the media came out and there were people on Twitter, everyone who knows everything about everything, or also known as nothing about anything, that the Marlins are rebuilding, forget the season. Peter Bendix, the general manager, said it's unlikely we're going to make the playoffs. We have an eye toward the future, but we also keep an eye on the present. When there's a trade like that that's happening, I wanted to bring you behind the scenes and go through that negotiation because there's several components to a trade where you're taking a piece off your major league roster, you're getting back prospects. Let's go to the baseball side. Way back during the offseason when you're putting your team together and you're aware of where your players are toward free agency, you put the players in different buckets. These are your pre-arb players. These are your first-time arbitration players, your second-time arbitration players, 1 year away from free agency players, pending free agents. You have a category of major league deals, which is when you bring someone into spring training, if you add them to the roster, it's a big league deal for, let's say, $1.5 million or $2 million. So you've got all these buckets of players. Then you talk about the team that you have and the expectation that you have. The expectation going into the season for the Marlins is that from a front office standpoint, that last year was the anomaly. It was super exciting to make the playoffs. They had an amazing run of wins in one run close games. And they had nothing to build on. Tremendous pitching injuries. Their Cy Young Award winning pitcher out on Tommy John, and that's before the rest of the rotation was hurt. So they went into this season thinking, we are not going to win. When you go into the season thinking that, you are rooting for one of two things. You don't want to be in the middle. You either want to get out of the gate really fast and say, you know what? Maybe we can have back-to-back years of this crazy luck. We're not good enough to be good, especially in our division, but we started off hot. We're going to let it ride. Or you start off and you're the worst team in baseball. Middle, bad. The Marlins started off and continue to be one of the worst teams in baseball. That gives you the green light to make the changes to the team that you want to make, that you have thought about making during the offseason. And when the Marlins are losing all these games, they then entertain the conversation of removing Arraez from the team. Why him? A lot of talk that Arraez wanted to sign a long-term deal. Never going to happen. What is the value of a leadoff hitter, batting champion, a negative defender, really better as a DH, on a team that likely doesn't have the offense to win. Put Arias on a team where he doesn't need to drive in runs, where he can get on base and then get driven in by a big-time middle of the lineup, and he takes on more value. On a team like the Marlins, his value was quite a bit smaller than that. Then you take his salary, which was $10.6 million. Little side note here about payroll. The Marlins have their budget like every team. You have your payroll and you have your P&L. Your P&L assumes a certain level of revenue, local revenue, national revenue, which is more guaranteed because baseball gives you an indication how much money you're going to get from national revenue. You then have the local revenue piece. You then have the revenue sharing piece. Revenue sharing is an estimate. You don't know what your revenue sharing is going to be until the true up happens way at the end of this year. Every November, there's a true up. Until then, you are given guidance by the league what your revenue sharing payments will be, but you don't know for sure. But you use that guidance as part of your budget. So the Marlins P&L with Arias making $10.6 million. $10.6 million, as you know, to make it easy, you take the $10.6 million and you divide it. It's a daily rate. Let's say there are 185 days in the championship season. That's what he gets paid per day. 10.6 divided by 185. I'd rather just do the math, assuming 6 months, April through September, take 10.6 divided by six, and that's what he gets paid per month. If you are going to take Arias off your team and you know you're not going to sign him, the question is, when do you get the most value for him? And the debate is, do you wait to the trade deadline, which is the end of July? Or do you do it during the offseason before the season even starts? The decision is not between May 3rd and July 31st. It's between December 3rd and then May through July. So the Marlins decided that they were going to ride Arias into the season. And then if they were not playing well, they would move him because he's worth more during the season than he would be going into next year when there's only 1 year of control for the acquiring team. When you move him during the season, you have a year and a half of control. And if they decided to move him before the season, it's 2 years of control. But they jumped off that bridge and said, we're going to go 1.5 years or 1 year. There was no way they were going to carry him and let him go all the way to free agency and take a qualifying offer. So you make the decision on each particular player what you're going to do. Then your GM, through his assistant GMs, through people in the scouting department, even people in development, they go out to other teams. They're scouting other teams. They're behind the cage at other minor league and major league games. And every scout is talking to every other scout. Hey, is this guy available? What are you guys thinking about this guy? So word gets out very quickly and easily that Arias is in play for an in-season trade. The Padres decided, for whatever reason, we're going to get to the Padres, but the Padres decided that they wanted to add a bat. They looked at Arias during the offseason. They were interested in him at the top of their lineup. They thought it made sense. You let Soto go. You bring in Arias. You still have people to drive in Arias. You've got a pitching staff that's fine in a division where you're clearly not the best team, Dodgers. You're probably not the second best team, Diamondbacks, but you want to believe that your window's still open. So you let it be known to the Marlins that you'd have an interest in Arias. The Marlins say, no, we're going to wait till the season starts. Then when the Marlins aren't playing well, AJ Preller, the GM of the Padres, reaches out and says, okay, can we rekindle the Arias talk? The first thing that gets discussed when you have a trade with a player like Arias is the money. It's before you talk about the prospects. You have the conversation, are you taking on his salary? If the Padres are not willing to take on his salary and they need the Marlins to pay the money, the Padres know they've got to give up more and better players. That's the equation. If you take on money, you give fewer players or fewer quality players. If you ask the trading team to pay the salary of the player they're trading, then you have to give better players, more players. When the trade was announced and I looked at what the take was for the Marlins, you look at the first round pick head from last year. You look at the signing bonus. He got $2+ million. You look at the one controllable reliever. You look at the tools of the three prospects. You look at the 4-1. Nobody is a sure superstar. Nobody in that trade is even projected to be an above average major leaguer. They're projected to be a major leaguer. Maybe. And I said to myself, and I said to Coca, there is no way that the Marlins paid Arise's contract. So the Marlins smartly are going to get an $8 million savings, which is significant when your team is losing money, to get that savings from a team that stinks and is going to lose 100 games. No sooner did I have the conversation with Coca that word comes out that the Marlins paid all of Arise's contract to the Padres. So then I realized, oh, David, of course you knew that. The acquiring team was the Padres. The Padres can't take on any money. The Padres are like in the penalty box of MLB, absolutely unable because of how irresponsible they were last year. They had to cut their payroll tremendously this year. There was no way they were taking on $8 million. Other teams, there'd be a chance to, Padres none. So given that the Marlins were paying the money, given that the quality of prospects coming back was less than stellar, it blows my mind that anyone could view this trade as anything other than a positive for the Padres. And I don't like crediting AJ Preller for anything. And I want the Marlins, contrary to what you think, I want them to succeed. If you're saving the money, I'm in. If you're not, I'm out. It is going to be fascinating what happens with the Padres going forward. The owners of the Padres, and you have to go through baseball, there's a little nugget for you. When you're getting money from a team, the commissioner has to approve any trade where more than $1 million is trading hands. So when you have an agreement, you get a signed LOI with the team for a trade, it's always pending two things. One, a physical, and two, exchange of medicals or a physical, and two is MLB approval. So you call the commissioner's office and you ask permission to do a trade that involves this much money. It is not shocking that the commissioner approved this trade. People were saying, oh, he shouldn't approve it because the Marlins are fire selling and all this other nonsense. The reason it's approved is that the Padres didn't take on payroll. What's the next step? For the Padres, you can keep Arias right now. The deadline is the end of July. If the Padres don't get better and they're below 500, maybe right around 500, if they're not in the race and they're smart, they will be able to move payroll from their team in order to decrease their losses, which they should do. By making an acquisition this early, you get sort of a free month, a free look, especially when the other team is paying the contract. For the Marlins, they're heading exactly toward where they were heading for with Arias. You might as well get the prospects. Shocking that you didn't save the money. The only thing that I will add about the Marlins is that I would fire the manager today. And that is going to sound like a difficult take given the popularity of Skip Schumacher. Manager of the year. I have no problem firing managers of the year. The reason why is he's got one foot out the door already. He's not a lame duck. He is not going to be back in Miami next year. It's not even a question. And when you know your manager's not going to be back, what's the difference? Start now. Show the clubhouse that we want loyalty. We want people who want to be here. You don't have to play nice with Skip. What has he done for you? Playoffs, great. Manager of the year, fine. The reason I would let him go, when I listened to the way he described that trade, when we trade players, we meet with the manager and we go through PR points. Here is what we want the GM to say. And Peter Bendix met the media and he was exactly on message, as boring, monotonous, monotone, and ridiculous as he may have sounded. He was exactly on message. Skippy was not exactly on message. There is no reason to say that you are shocked, that this is a difficult day. People understand that the clubhouse is going to be upset. People understand that it means that you're not winning this year, that you're not going to win, that you're not trying to win. But you need your manager to carry the PR water, and Skip did not do it. I would be furious, and that's why I would let him go. We'll see what happens here going forward with these teams, but I think that from the Marlins standpoint, good for them. LeBron James is in charge of the Lakers, always has been. We know this. LeBron James is not a good GM. We know that too. Surrounding yourself with friends is not the way to do it. LeBron James has a very hard time figuring out who he wants as his coach. Since Phil Jackson left, the Lakers have had 7 different coaches. I'm including Bernie Bickerstaff, who coached 5 games. And this weekend, the Lakers fired Darvin Ham. 1 year after going to the Western Conference Finals, losing to the Nuggets, they decided that the first round loss to the Nuggets, just by happenstance, they played them in the first round, that they needed a new voice. They even released an entire statement saying that they've dismissed Darvin Ham as head coach, but quote, "We greatly appreciate his efforts on behalf of the Lakers and recognize the many accomplishments achieved over the past 2 seasons, including last year's remarkable run to the Western Conference Finals." Why was that remarkable? Wasn't the team put together in order to win a championship? When you bring in AD and you allow LeBron to make other peripheral moves and you make the huge trade that you made last year to change out personnel, was it to be a first-round loser? Maybe to be in the lottery? I don't know why in a statement you would call last year's run a remarkable run. What was remarkable about it when it's something that you want to be doing every year? And then you end the statement with, "The organization will remain unwavering," thank God, "in its commitment to deliver championship caliber basketball to Lakers fans around the world." That's very nice. I'm glad that you're unwavering in your commitment to deliver championship caliber basketball. I think that's right out of the template of what to do when you fire your coach. How do you think that went? You think that Rob Pelinka spoke to Jeannie Buss and said, "I think we should get rid of Darvin. Should we call LeBron?" "Nah, we'll just do it." Horse hockey. LeBron called them and said, "We're moving on. I've got a player option next year. I want an extension. I want Bronny, and I want a new coach. Step one, get me the new coach." Who would want to take the job? Would you want to take that job? Anybody want to take the Lakers job with an aging LeBron, who's still one of the top 15 players in the league? Unbelievable what he's doing at his age. But does anyone think that the Lakers are anything other than a second-tier Western Conference team? A new coach is going to make a difference? Bronny, a year older LeBron at $50 million, is that going to make a difference? Absolutely not. However, there's only a score and a half jobs available. Anybody's going to want that job, and they would take it. I'm going to do a wait to see here. Wait to see is when we tell you something's going to happen. If it does, we'll revisit it. If it doesn't, we'll revisit it. And we always revisit ones either way, like September 15th of last year. So that's 7 months ago. We said that Alek Manoah will not pitch for the Blue Jays in 2024. When he had that whole issue with the Blue Jays, I assumed they would move on from him because he stinks. They secreted him in the minor leagues. But guess what? He started yesterday and he stunk. And this is a team that I think should win it, be able to win the division. But I got that wait to see wrong. Can you imagine 4 innings, 6 hits, 7 runs, and it's an incorrect wait to see for that crap? That bothered me. The wait to see I'm going to give you now, people are wondering about LeBron. There's nothing to wonder. The minute Darvin Ham got called that he was being fired was the minute that LeBron was coming back to the Lakers. So all of the other talk, not happening. LeBron returns to Lakers next season. Before I move on, Coca, I want to touch a little bit on the Blue Jays and the disappointment. They're one of the disappointing teams right now. When you've got a pitcher and you've got a pitcher like Manoah, who had shown absolute brilliance a couple years ago. I want to say he was one of the finalists for Cy Young. Very young, not making a ton of money yet. It is really hard to change your evaluation. It's really hard to give up. I thought they would give up on him because I thought the evaluation would have said that was the anomaly, the Cy Young finalist year. He is who he is now, and he's got an attitude problem, and he's not performing. He finished, what, third in the Cy Young in 2022? It's so hard to trade a player at the high. I spent a career trading players at the low, and it is one of the biggest indictments of my career. If you do that in the stock market, you end up poor. That's called buying high and selling low. It's the opposite of what you want to do. Something that the Rays have been so good at is trading players a year too early versus a year too late. It takes such discipline. It takes such a lack of emotion and a lack of connection to your players or your fans to actually run a team the way that will generate the most wins possible. When you have a player like Alek Manoah and you hang on too long, you get this. And then you force your manager, hot seat manager, might I add. I wonder whether Don Mattingly is aware that he easily could be named interim manager of this team if the Blue Jays don't turn it around. But anyway, John Schneider, you have your manager say, hey, today he was as good as I've seen him stuff-wise in quite a while. Huh? That's what we have managers say when players get rocked. We say, man, his stuff was good. That's like when a hitter is 0 for his last 20, and we're not talking about Holiday, who you send down, who, by the way, Jackson Holiday is not doing well at AAA, but I digress. He's slumping there too. But when a hitter is not doing well, what you say is, we love the approach. We love the consistency. He just hasn't had the luck. He's going to get a ball to drop in, and then he's going to be off and running. When a pitcher gives up a bunch of runs, you say, ooh, but he's got great stuff. I used to tell our GMs, you know what you can do with the pitcher's stuff? You can shove it up your keister. Don't care. I want pitchability. I want results. Results. What a business we're in sports. Podcasting is no different. Your business is no different. We're all in the business of results. I don't like people saying, I'm in the process business. I'm very focused on my process. I want you to trust my process. Believe you me, if we keep doing things the way we're doing, we're going to take off. Trust me. We are going to be Howard Jones. Things are just going to get better. I'd much rather people say, hey, I don't even know how we did this, but man, we're kicking ass. It's okay. But everyone's got such an ego when they put together a sports team or when they put together their own business that they want to believe that it's their process that led to the great results. Yet when the results aren't great, they're saying, hey, just trust the process. It'll turn around. I wonder what process you go through after you do something where you have made such a huge mistake. You're in the middle of a terrible PR situation. Your career as a podcaster could be in jeopardy. Your career as a basketball player could be in jeopardy because you're mediocre to start with. We covered on Monday the Pat Beverly situation. Go back and listen to that show. Pat Beverly is the one who said to the ESPN producer, you may not be in my scrum if you're not a subscriber to my podcast. And he's gotten torched. Absolutely torched, as he should be. He apologized. Over the weekend, there was a rumor that ESPN was going to punish him and not allow him on their platform because the producer who he kicked out of his scrum was an ESPN producer. Did anyone else find it strange that ESPN released a statement about this? They got a lot of stuff to think about and worry about, yet they're focused on doing a statement trying to make sure that we know that Patrick Beverly, in fact, is not banned from any ESPN platforms. If you spend your time trying to right every wrong that is written about you or every bit of fake news that is out there about you or your company, I am selling your stock. because you are not focused on the results. You're focused on the process. You're focused on, I want to make sure there's no misinformation out here, so we're going to clarify. There was an erroneous report that we're going to make sure is totally cleared up. That required 3 emails, 2 conference calls, and 2 in-person meetings. And then they do a statement saying, no, no, we're all set with Patrick Beverley. He's not banned. Do you know why I would ban Patrick Beverley? Because what exactly does he add to any of the shows that he does? What does he add to the court on which he plays? And you think that the apology from Beverley is enough? People who do things like that, that's purposeful. And that's my issue, is that Beverley wasn't trying to be disrespectful to that woman. He was actually of the view that why should I give anybody my content who doesn't pay or subscribe to my content? Maybe he's onto something. Why is it that athletes now are having their own podcasts? Why are they having a harder and harder time agreeing to do post-game interviews? Why are teams having a harder and harder time getting players to do anything on their accounts on their behalf when players have now taken control of their own message, of the dissemination of their own message, of the form in which the message takes, and the time and the timing of when the message is given? Maybe Patrick Beverley just shouldn't have said anything. Maybe what you do is you say before a scrum starts, hey, I hope you all subscribe to my podcast, because what I'm going to talk about here, I'm not going to give you much, but I'm definitely going to address this game, this moment on my podcast. The episode drops tomorrow. I'm in. I am all in on that if players or executives or anybody does it that way. We are not owed free information from people. We are not owed people meeting the media to tell us things the way we want to be told through the medium that we want it told. Players have every right to do it through their own platform. And you're seeing more and more of it. And you think that that's changing? It's only going to get more so. You'll see. All right, when we come back, we're going to review the roast that I watched last night. I cannot believe that roast. And then we're going to talk about some races that went on this weekend, which were fascinating. And from F1 standpoint, the Miami Grand Prix was an absolute home run. I'll explain after the break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to Nothing Personal. Hope you all had a good weekend. It's David Sampson here with Matthew and Sarah. They're here every day, 8 a.m., live on the Nothing Personal with David Sampson YouTube channel. If you're listening to this, thank you. Telling your friends about it. If you're watching, hit the subscribe button. If you're watching on DraftKings Network or Roku or anywhere else that MetalArk is pimping out Nothing Personal, then find out where the platform is and hit subscribe. That'll be helpful. Thank you. I was going to review a movie today, but once I watched the 3-hour Tom Brady roast, I knew I had to review that. If you have not watched it on Netflix, it was live last night, 8 to 11. It was Kevin Hart was the host. It took place at the Effin Forum in Englewood. An appearance by my friend Rich Eisen as the MC introducing Kevin Hart. That was cool. A lot of homosexual jokes about Tom Brady. A lot of suicide jokes about Aaron Hernandez. A lot of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And it turns out Gronk may be the smartest person on the stage. In what Nikki Glaser had the line of the night when she said that Tom Brady, how could he have taken and lost $30 million in cryptocurrency when even Gronkowski knew that crypto is not real and you're going to get your ass kicked? I wasn't offended by any of it. I laughed out loud at a lot of it. I didn't think Ben Affleck was funny at all. I thought Archie Manning was hysterical. I thought that Archie Manning was not there. 4869. I thought that Peyton Manning was hysterical. I thought that Randy Moss was out of place, but interesting. I thought that the Tampa Bay Buccaneer players were super quiet. I thought that Edelman represented outstandingly. Jeff Ross with his O.J. Simpson made me laugh. And my true takeaway is that Tom Brady is not someone that I want to have drinks with. Did he come out as likable to you in that roast, Coca, in your mind? Now, as a quarterback, he's the greatest of all time. I'm not talking about that. And he's a good sport for getting paid seven figures to be roasted on Netflix Live. I'm in on that. I'm all in on business and maximizing your revenue and your salary and your equity. Love it all. But one of the things that I like to use as a frame of reference is, would I allocate my time to hang out? Like, I think I'd want to hang out with Gronk. I think it'd be fun. Kevin Hart would be fun. Nikki Glaser would be fun. I'd even want to hang out with Bill Belichick. I just don't know that I'd want to hang out at all with Tom Brady. There was one bit of discomfort in a roast. The definition of a roast is you're going to be offended. And Kevin Hart just said it straight out. You better get comfortable in being uncomfortable. And believe me, there was a lot of discomfort in the room with a lot of the jokes. They went right up to the line, and then the line kept moving. So it was a little shocking. It's a little shocking to me when we discovered where the line is. Apparently, jokes about happy endings and Robert Kraft, verboten. Tom Brady went up to Jeff Ross when Jeff Ross made a joke about the massage and Robert Kraft, who was there, and said, no more of that. Was that a bit? Didn't look like a bit to me. Did Tom Brady not pay attention during rehearsals? Did he not realize that there was going to be a Robert Kraft joke about happy endings? It's the lowest hanging fruit at the entire roast. But I guess that that's too far. Nice reunion between Belichick and Kraft. So much love in that room between them. Robert Kraft made it a point to say, you're the greatest coach of all time, and it's my honor to have spent the number of years we spent together. It puts the disingenuous. But if you get a chance to watch on Netflix The Greatest Roast of All Time, it is 180 minutes. I watched it straight through. You will laugh out loud, just not when Ben Affleck talks. Max Verstappen did not win the Miami Grand Prix. Story at 11. Anyone else think it's a coincidence? Anyone else as cynical as I'm? Did you take your cynical pills for a Monday morning? Because I did. All sorts of articles. F1, Verstappen's winning too much. It's not competitive. It's not fun. Sponsors are getting ootsy. Fans are getting worried. Ratings are not going up at the rate that they should be going up because there's no competition. It's ridiculous. It's like the Yankees or the Dodgers going 162-0. What's the fun? Drive to Survive has to spend time talking about when number 8 takes over number 7 and who's at the bottom of this grid and standings. And then all of a sudden, Max Verstappen's in the lead. He's going to win the Miami Grand Prix again. And then boom, a safety car comes out. The thing about a safety car in a Grand Prix race is it takes whatever lead you had and your lead disappears. Norris took advantage of the safety car, was able to pit, and was able to win the race, hanging on for the last 25 laps or whatever it was. I don't know. I just took my Cynics pill. It was the biggest, most important thing for someone other than Verstappen to win. And you get a McLaren win, first time win ever for Norris winning a Grand Prix. First ever in the U.S., a very high-profile, successful race. Credit to Stephen Ross for what he does. That's the parking lot. I found it to be a little strange. Why do they call the Derby the greatest? Is it the, what is the saying? It's the greatest 2 minutes in sports, the fastest 2 minutes in sports. It can't be that, because 2 minutes is 2 minutes. Although not all 2 minutes are created equal. You can have some 2 minutes that take 30 minutes. What do they call a Coca? The greatest 2 minutes in sports? Is that the Kentucky Derby? I did not get a bet in, though I was watching the Derby with my girlfriend. It's the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. I don't know about that. I think when Mahomes has the ball, needs a score, and there's under 2 minutes to play, I guess the point is it takes more than 2 minutes for that to happen. I still think that's more exciting. Or when there's 30 seconds left in an NBA game that takes 2 minutes, or it's bases loaded, bottom of the ninth, and then there's a rain delay for 3 hours. That's the most exciting 180 minutes in sports. Side note before I talk about the Derby. If Major League Baseball could fire C.B. Buckner and Angel Hernandez right now, they would. I think we all know that. C.B. Buckner is a horrific umpire. He's been a horrific umpire since I started in the game. When you have him behind the plate, you know you have a problem, much like Angel Hernandez. They are the two worst umpires. It's not close. You poll any executive in baseball, 30 managers, 30 GMs, 30 presidents. Name the two worst umpires in Major League Baseball. There will be 90 ballots. GMs, presidents, managers. Buckner and Hernandez will appear, the two of them, on 89 of the 90 ballots, and one Yutz will put in somebody else plus Angel. Did you see that? A three-hour rain delay with two bottom of the 10th, bases loaded, two strikes, and then they call a rain delay. Now, it was pouring, don't get me wrong. But when you're that close to ending a game, let him throw one more pitch, let him finish the batter. Then they make the players sit around for 3 hours. Our players would have been on the phone to the union saying, what the hell is going on here? This is ridiculous. They hang on 3 hours, and then immediately C.B. Buckner calls him out on strikes on a pitch that was outside. Horrific. I don't know why that got into my head, but it did. We were talking about the Derby and the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. So I'm watching the Derby. It turned on at 6:55. Did not know the horses who were running. Looked at the names, and much like David Johansson and Let It Ride, when he bet on Junebug in the third race, it's the name of my cat. People do that. They bet on horses thinking it's the name unless they've got inside information, because don't worry, there's no inside information in horse racing. Totally above board. Totally kosher. So I chose Forever Young because I like the song. She chose Sierra Leone because she likes traveling and has lived in Africa. Coca had an exacta of Sierra Leone, coincidentally, and Forever Young, totally coincidentally. And in a photo finish, look at that finish if you're watching on YouTube. Talk about by a nose. Look at the three horse, Mystic Dan winning by a nose. That is pretty exciting. Though, I do have an issue with the Kentucky Derby. I've been thinking about it. I love horses, such beautiful animals. I love riding horses. I mean, Jorge Cantu, one of my former players, used to jokingly call me a jockey because I'm vertically challenged. And I said, I'm not a jockey. I'm too tall to be a jockey. And B, I'm not nearly talented enough. I can't even be a coxswain. It's hard to do that too. Or the one who jumps around on trapeze, the small people. It takes a lot of talent. I was watching the jockeys and thinking about how fast they're going. And Sierra Leone, if you watch the two-minute race, they were like bumping the whole time with Forever Young. And those horses are going fast. And what I kept thinking about is, do the horses like this? because we'd read a lot about horses are dying and there's all sorts of doping going on. And we bet on these horses and there's so much money wagered on these animals. There's something wrong about that sport, isn't there? And I'm not MFing the Kentucky Derby. NBC just re-upped it through 2000 and like in the 30s. It was the 150th Kentucky Derby, record number of people. There were 150,000 people going to the Derby, all of whom are there to drink and be seen and wear cool hats and be in the track where it happened. It sort of must be what it was like in old times to go to gladiator matches, where you go sit in a suite and watch people kill each other. Maybe that's a modern day MMA match, which all of the networks have certainly gotten behind. I guess we like sports. NFL is no different. I guess we like sports where people just beat the crap out of each other. Those horses get whipped. And I'm not a PETA guy, don't get me wrong. There's just something that rubbed me wrong there. The third race that I didn't watch, but that someone tweeted at me, so thank you, David P. Sampson on Twitter. Go on the David SampsonPodcast.com if you want to look at some cool Nothing Personal merch and represent. Someone sent me a great picture, Coca. I can't remember who it was. They were wearing a Nothing Personal shirt out in the wild, and then someone else had noticed it. We're getting out there. That is quite humbling, and I'm quite thankful to you, the audience. That is really cool. I didn't watch the NASCAR race, but Kyle Larson won. Look at that photo finish. Like by a bumper, 0.001 seconds. I mean, that's unbelievable. Okay, that's all I had on that. Nothing Personal pick of the day. We are 57-66 after we split this weekend. We had the Mavs 8 over the Clips. The Mavs eliminated the Clippers. The Clippers are in their offseason. The biggest news of the Clippers offseason is that the Lakers fired Ham. There was some rumor that LeBron may want a reunion with Ty Lue. So Ty Lue takes the stage and says, hey, I'd like to be here. Meaning the Clippers. What he means is he'd like to have an extension. Then there was a rumor that maybe Jason Kidd will go and be the coach of the Lakers, but I don't think so. The Mavericks just announced an extension. Do you think that LeBron and his friends talk and say, hey, this happens in baseball all the time with coaches and scouts where they conspire against management because they call their friend on another team and ask the other team to call their team and say, hey, we really want to hire this guy. And then we say, we don't want to lose this guy. And then we talk to the guy and say, do you want to go to the other team? And the guy says, no, I'd love to stay here, but I need a raise to do it. And then you're like, fine, I'll give you a raise. And it turns out the other team didn't want him to start with, but they totally manipulated the system to get more money for themselves. God bless him. You got leverage, use it. I think Jason Kidd just got an extension from the Mavericks doing that very thing. Ty Lue is trying to get an extension from Ballmer going into their new facility. If I'm coaching the Clippers and I have a chance to coach the Lakers and I don't have to move my family, which am I going to choose? Who would you rather coach, Clippers or Lakers? I don't think it's a question. I really don't. There's something wrong with the way the Clippers are made. Then we had the Nuggets 4.5 over the Wolves in game one. And I forgot that Anthony Edwards is going to score 43 points and that the T-Wolves are an outstanding defensive team and that the Nuggets may be not understanding how significantly difficult this series will be. And the T-Wolves stole game one. The most unfortunate expression when the media uses that to describe a road team winning a game one, they stole it. They didn't steal anything. The T-Wolves outplayed the Nuggets and earned a victory in a league where home court advantage is not what it used to be. Notwithstanding that game sevens are won by the home team 75% of the time, and the Cavs just won a game seven this weekend, but wouldn't we all agree that it's totally different now that when you're on the road as an NBA team, you don't feel the way you used to feel, where you had absolutely no chance to win. Now you feel like you can win at least one, maybe two games on the road. So that Nuggets T-Wolves series likely will go the distance, but the T-Wolves certainly got off well. Game two is tonight. I find it hard to imagine that the Nuggets are going to lose two in a row at home. The Nuggets were giving 4.5 on Saturday. They're giving 5.5 on Monday. And I am shocked. I can't believe that there's only a 1-point premium for a team that's not going to lose 2 in a row at home, that's guaranteed to win. Maybe the view is it's going to be a close game. But generally, when you pick a winner, you're going to get the team who covers. We're taking the Nuggets to win the game, and we're happy to give the points. Nuggets, 5.5 over the Wolves is today's Nothing Personal pick of the day. Let's talk about lawsuits. I love lawsuits. I do. I think they're the ultimate equalizer. When you feel you've been wronged, you've got an entire system that we've developed here in the United States and around the world. Came from England with the white wigs and everything. When you feel that someone has not done what they promised they would do, you get to ask them to do it. And if they still won't do it, then you get to go through a process where you tell them to do it. How great is that? Lawsuits are used by all sorts of people. Sometimes it's used simply to pressure people. Sometimes it's used to force people to do something you want them to do. There is no question there's an advantage to deep pockets when it comes to lawsuits. But there's a certain type of lawsuit that I'm the most familiar with, and that's having partners suing me. Now, I don't want to say that that happens all the time. I wasn't the general partner of the Expos or the Marlins. I was just the guy running the team. However, the guy running the team always is mentioned in the lawsuits. We had partners filing lawsuits against us every month in Gedanishtick. Maybe one day they'll win one. Though they're not partners anymore. Why don't you just say thank you for the ring and for the 1.2 valuation and get out of town? Anyway, there's a lawsuit that's going on with another set of limited partners. Limited partners are funny in any partnership. What a limited partner is someone who doesn't have the right to make any decisions, but is paying someone, a general partner, to make decisions in the best interests of the entire partnership. But it's not linear. When you're running a partnership, it is very common that what you think is in the best interest of the partnership is different than what other partners think is in the best interest of the partnership, which is why you have a partnership agreement that outlines what rights the general partner has to make certain decisions and how limited partners have a right to have 4 meetings a year. They have a right to be consulted. They have a right to get information, but they don't have a right to make decisions. That is not part of what being a limited partner is. Stuart Sternberg is the owner of the Rays, and he's in the middle of a lawsuit. His partners are all suing him. And this weekend, they reached a tentative settlement. Now, you may not recall this lawsuit, but we touched on it, but I want to touch on it again just to remind you what happened. It's a suit that was filed about 3 years ago, and a bunch of Rays minority partners got together and said, Stu, you are engaging in fraudulent and a relentless scheme to consolidate team control, to take over, and withhold details about our finances, and you're secretly negotiating to move a team to Montreal. I have great sympathy for this case because I got accused of secretly scheming to move a team out of Montreal. Now Sternberg is accused of secretly trying to move a team to Montreal. It appears that the 5 limited partners are not fans of Nothing Personal, because if they were, they would have heard from the beginning that there was zero chance of the team actually splitting its season with Montreal. That really what your general partner was doing was trying to get the best stadium deal possible in the Tampa area, or convince the commissioner that he's at wit's end, he's tried everything, and allow the team to relocate. That's the step that a general partner does. It's completely normal. And as for financial statements, let me be clear how partnerships work. I have never seen nor participated in any partnership where the limited partners do not get financial statements. Sometimes it's annual, sometimes it's quarterly. There's always a right to examine the financial statements to say that they did not get information about the team's income, I find to be horse hockey. if you're a limited partner of a baseball team and, hey, I've got a question. I've gotten a million calls from partners. Hey, what was the attendance last night? Not the bullshit you made up. What was the attendance? Happy to tell you. Hey, what was the revenue that we got for the first 20 games of the year? No problem. Happy to tell you. Hey, can we have a meeting? I want to go over your projections. No problem. Here are the projections. Well, I've got some changes. Nope. Now I've got a problem. Well, I think you should trade this player or that player low the payroll. Nope. That's not your role. But suing Stu Sternberg saying that we have no idea, we had no access, we did not get any details about the team's income, I'm not buying it. Now, you can try to remove the general partner. Limited partners try to do that all the time. Good luck. You got to prove the GP did something in the interest of only the GP and not the LPs, which is hard to prove because GPs are also LPs. So they are incentivized to do things to help all LPs. It is a huge thing when these lawsuits settle because it's a huge pain in the neck for a partnership to spend money on legal fees when there's infighting. This Rays settlement will not get them 1 second closer to a new ballpark in Tampa or St. Pete. It will not make the minority partners friendly with Stu Sternberg. But the way it settles is they get into a room and they look at each other and say, screw you, it's just business. See you later. This is nothing personal.